The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning, and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes of frank, open, honest conversation about gambling addiction and compulsive gamblers like myself. And, of course, my partner here on the fan for this show, Dan Trelaro. Danny, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Craig. Good morning. I'm home for a bit and heading back out on the road next week.
Nice. Well, good to have you home. Hopefully enjoying that. And very happy to have, for the first time in about 3.5 years, Dr. Tim Fong out at UCLA, who's one of the foremost experts on gambling addiction. And it does a lot of work in the space with shows like ours and, you know, state to state to try to help inform people about the behavior of addicts and what's going on inside our skulls here. Doc, good morning to you. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
So I guess the easiest first question for you, you know, we're now in, what, our fourth year of doing this show. When we first talked to you at the start of the show, a lot's happened since then. More states have come on board with legalized gambling. Millions of more Americans are now gambling. From your standpoint, from a medical standpoint, from a research standpoint, give me an idea of what's gone on your side of the fence in these last 4 years.
Well, that's an amazing question. Look, I'm older, I'm wiser, I have less hair. I'm not quite sure we're that much farther along, but we do know a lot more. So essentially, we know this. Number one, in the last 4 years, more people are developing gambling disorder. As simple as that. We know that because phone calls are going up in every single state on gambling helplines. We know because shows like yours, downloads, and a number of podcasts about the stories of folks in recovery are gone up. And not just casually, you know, people are really hungry for this information. And we know here at our UCLA Gambling Studies program, the kind of people I'm seeing, it's totally changed. You know, if we were 10 years ago, predominantly we're talking about older males, women, you know, all sorts of folks, slot machine players. The last 10 patients I've seen as new patients, exclusively between 18 and 25, young men, mobile sports betting. So everything's changed in terms of how many people are gambling, who's more vulnerable than even 10 years ago. But the good news is that we also have more in prevention and more in treatment and more just open discussion. So a lot of times we'll say we've normalized sports betting, but we've also normalized getting help for gambling problems. I think that's really, really huge in 2024.
Yeah, and I want to get into that part of it in a second, but before I do that, I don't want to let the moment pass. You know, I guess it's one thing, you know, if a 35-year-old guy or gal comes in and recognizes they have a problem, you know, they have to have the impetus on their own to walk into a doctor's office like yourself, to go to a treatment center, to go to GA. But my gut is that for the new patients you're seeing, the 18 to 25-year-olds, it's likely a parent that might be bringing them in. Or am I wrong on that?
Oh, 1,000%. Look, I'm Gen X. You guys are Gen X. These are millennial parents. These are Gen Z patients. So why does that matter? Because what they want is very different than what I would want. They're coming in, mom, dad are worried, or more concerning, they've stolen stuff from
right.
parents and grandparents. There's a huge insult yeah. that happens, right?
And so do you find that the younger patients, because these are the young men and women, you know, that Dan travels the country talking to at the NCAA level, the college tour that I'm doing, you know, we're trying to reach these younger people. Do you find that when mom and dad bring them in because they're concerned, because, yeah, maybe the kid's lying and he stole his brother's piggy bank or grandma's credit card, et cetera, that you're getting them at an earlier stage of the addiction? Or still
not
full
always,
out?
Not always.
No.
I had a kid last week, $80,000 that he stole from grandma's jewelry.
Wow.
That's not earlier. That's severe. But the amount of time spent gambling was less than a year. So that's what's changed, is that we see an acceleration in the type of harm, the type of damage, the type of crisis and chaos and pain it generates. But that being said, a lot of these young men, they're psychologically minded. They're willing to do the work. The parents are willing to do the work. So that, you know, it requires a different set of tools and treatments than we ever used to do before. As an example, I'll say it again. Many times I'm now giving them podcasts like yourselves to watch and listen. They often don't want to go to GA. I say, you got to go to GA, but they'll say no. They're like, give me a podcast. And I'll say, Broke Girl Society, All In. You know, My Name is Craig. You know, these are legitimate things that they actually use. So I think that's a huge difference.
So, Dan, let me ask you this. As you've traveled the country and been to, you know, 50-plus college campuses over the last couple of years, do you find the same thing where it's not just that younger kids are gambling and can't control it, but the amount of gambling they're doing has exceeded what the generation before them did?
Yeah, I'm seeing it. The earlier exposure, right? They're preoccupied. They're thinking about it. They're talking about it. They're consuming it on media. You know, some of the observations that I take away, and Tim and I have talked about this when we chat on the phone, you know, college kids say, I don't gamble. I just bet on sports. They see it as a side job. They see it as another way to earn an income. They're risk takers, especially when we're dealing with athletes. Athletes are conditioned to think that the more they practice something, the better they'll get. And if they don't see gambling as that potentially harmful activity, they don't understand the risks that they're taking, they're going to keep practicing and practicing and chasing because they're going to get better. So we're seeing it across the spectrum, starting earlier, talking about it, consuming it. And, you know, one of the things, you know, Tim, you and I have talked about is also that digital online gambling, because you almost have to relearn your relationship with your smartphone if you're in recovery from gambling. So how much of this also is part of a broader tech issue that you're seeing?
Oh, you know, it's, again, the phone is the syringe that delivers the content that gets the dopamine up, whether it's gambling, gaming, adult entertainment, content, whatever you want to call it. So absolutely, we see that. And, you know, there's no real educational manual on how to use the phone. You know, the other part there, again, is not, we're not to normalize gambling as a way of making money, that we forget that the pandemic took away a lot of these young kids' ability to make money. And I've had a number of cases where I said to the kid, well, why don't you just get a job? And he's like, oh, my mom and dad don't want me going out. Or why would I expose myself to germs inside a fast food restaurant? So that's another huge element. Wow. It's this need for spectacular success. We've normalized not just making money, but making money fast, making money big, making money quickly. So you can post on social media, here's my same game parlay that I netted $1,000.
And I think part of the issue here, obviously, the phone's an issue, but I think it's an issue in two ways. Obviously, the pandemic didn't help for sure because, you know, a lot of lonely people looking for an outlet, and the phone provided some type of outlet for them just as a distraction. But I think, you know, my kids, and certainly I think my grandkids when I have them, they're growing up in a generation that's unlike any before it, where there's no need for interpersonal socialization. Like even my kids, how come you don't talk to your friends? Well, I text my friends. That's how I talk to them. But, you know, the interpersonal skills have gone away. And I think for someone that's lonely anyway, who doesn't have interpersonal friendships, connections, you know, a social life, like every generation before theirs did, we know that gambling feeds into isolation. And when you're already isolated and now you can sit in your home and gamble for 24/7, I think that's why you're seeing an escalation in how quickly kids go from my first bet to I have a problem.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And it ties in with the loneliness epidemic that our Surgeon General talks about. So I don't think we're talking about that enough. The other really key thing here, guys, is availability of online credit. Many of my patients say, well, where do you get it? And they're like, oh, I get it from online sources, from online payday loans or credit cards I got in my own name, or I simply borrow my parents' credit card from their Apple Wallet and away I go, or PayPal, Venmo, just friends borrowing friends. You know, so that space, which is incredibly unregulated, you don't have a gambling problem if you don't have any money to gamble with. But compared to the 80s, where I could barely scrape, you know, 50 cents together for a Sports Illustrated, you know, listen, this is a very different time.
Yeah, it's funny. I've been asked to go talk to a number of high schools, and sometimes, you know, the PTA thinks the kids are too young to hear it, but I'm going to talk to one in about 4 or 5 weeks because that's what's happening. Kids are borrowing their mom and dad's credit card. They're gambling, and, you know, I've had friends of mine ask what I think about it, and my issue with that is that if mom and dad are still paying off the credit card bill, that's where it becomes dangerous, because now the 18-year-old gambler has no idea what it's like to lose. There's no repercussion of a loss, because I don't care if it's $50 on a game, your mom or dad's paying the bill. So you only win. But I do want to get to one thing you said, Doc, because you know, I've been saying this for a very long time. And a lot of new states where I'm asked to go talk to legislatures, you know, state by state as they come on, just don't quite get this. And what I've said repeatedly in every interview I've done is one of the upsides of the widespread legalization of gambling is that we're going to mainstream the conversation. And I think that's a really positive thing, because, you know, if you go back just 4 or 5 years ago, before, you know, the courts decided that state by state could legalize it, gambling was still viewed as a mob thing, a back alley thing, you know, the dirty horse racing community, that type of thing. And now that gambling conversation is going to be a dinner table, you know, byproduct of the legalization, I do think it's going to make it easier and more normalized and comfortable for a compulsive gambler to raise their hand and say, I need help. Where 5 years ago, we never would have done that. I know I wouldn't have done it. But now that the conversation is being more, you know, standardized and normalized and widespread, I do think it's going to make it easier for people to ask for help.
You know, I certainly hope so. I think, though, at the end, it's still really difficult. You think about what it's like when you committed acts of shame and embarrassment and guilt, lying, all that core stuff, right? And then to say, well, the answer isn't talking to a therapist. The answer is gambling more. So I think what we have to normalize, not only that, is normalize that there can and will be problems from gambling, and that there's a difference between losing and feeling bad, and then losing and then being suicidal. I mean, those are the areas where, of course, you're going to need, you know, professional help. But there's no doubt. There's no doubt that you just go, you know, anywhere. I was on the bus this morning, and I hear people talking about gambling, about, oh, gambling on the Olympics, which I never would have imagined, right? And I was overhearing these two guys talk about the rugby game yesterday and saying, well, why was it so low scoring? And what's the number, you know, and how do we win on this? That's changed, but they were having fun talking to each other, so we can't minimize that. But what we can maximize is what you're saying is, how do we get people to seek help? Because by the time they see folks like me, damage is really bad. It's really severe. How do we get folks that in the early stages is a very difficult question.
I know we got to take a quick break. You're right. Nobody goes to see a GA room or a therapist or a doctor like yourself until they've got a full-on problem and their lives are going down a bad road. That's for sure. We'll take a quick break. Dr. Timothy Fong joins us from UCLA. And, of course, Dan Trelawer on Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Dr. Tim Fong out of UCLA, one of the foremost experts on gambling addiction. And, of course, Dan Trelawer. You know, it's funny, Doc, going into the break there, you know, you did reference that for some people, you know, obviously most people, they're not going to reach out for help until they're like at bottom of the barrel. Dan and I talk about this a lot. When I share my story, when Dan shares his, there's a part of it where I want to be very honest with the audience, and not every single aspect of my gambling was negative. And I think sometimes if we get in a position where we would just become preachy about recovery and getting help and going to GA, and we pretend like every single aspect of our gambling history was all negative, that we might be turning people off. And I wonder your take on when you talk to gamblers, or when you bring in people to talk who are in recovery, like, what's the comfortable kind of line where it's okay to say, look, I still have some fond memories of gambling, but the bigger picture, of course, is that, you know, that's far more negative than positive.
You know, when I first started off, you know, they used to call those war stories. Don't share war stories, right? That's just going to trigger people and get them urging and craving for more. That's just not, doesn't happen. This is what I say to folks. Okay, listen, your brain is built differently. Your personality is built differently, and unfortunately, you develop this gambling disorder. But the same qualities that led you to develop this addiction are the exact same qualities that can lead you to really spectacular success in life, whether it be in business or in school or relationships, to call it what you will. And I think that's when people realize that, oh, I'm not damaged. I'm not, you know, a bad person. I just have and built differently. So if you say, you know, if I say to you, you know, any person, I need you to stand at a craps table for 8 hours straight, invariably most people cannot do that.
Right.
Folks with gambling disorder can. So in many respects, that's a strength. That's resilience. That's being able to stick through something despite ups and downs. So we reframe it and we say, you're not damaged. You're not damaged goods. Mm. No, the qualities that really hurt you will help you if we reframe it. I don't like to bring up those, quote, old positive messages, but you're absolutely right. The very first phase of any gambling disorder or any addiction is that winning phase where the dopamine's flowing, where the adrenaline's running. That's what everyone's chasing that feeling. And I say, you know, we may not get that same feeling, but we're going to get pretty darn close when recovery hits and it hits well.
Yeah, I want Dan, you to come in this as well. And you're one of my biggest complaints in coast to coast is the fact that every state that has legalized gambling has now brought in, you know, 8, 9, 10 figures in tax revenue. I mean, billions and billions of dollars, right? It's hand over fist money that they never had before. And to my knowledge, and I don't believe this has changed since I looked it up a few weeks ago, not a single state in our country has decided to earmark a nickel of that money to open up a gambling recovery center. And one of the issues I had before I found a rehab center out in Prescott, Arizona, you know, this is going back, obviously, you know, about 7, 8 years now, is that at the time, there were only 3 gambling-specific treatment centers in this country. There was one in Minnesota, there was the one I went to in Arizona, and there's one down, I believe there was in West Virginia. I just wonder for you in your world, Doc, and I want Dan, you to comment on this as well. Are there more opening up that you're aware of? And if you're somebody who thinks he has a problem or has a loved one who has a problem, you know, where would you even start to send that person to go get help?
Yeah, I'll start, and then Tim, obviously, you'll have more information. I know we have Louisiana with CORE. You know, I know of about 4 to 5, right? And it's still woefully, gambling as an addiction is still woefully underfunded at the federal level, at the state level. And that's why it's so important to have policy and legislative pieces in place so that we can get monies allocated. I'm wondering if today's client coming in for therapy, for treatment, for services, they're going more the telehealth route. We've seen a boom in telehealth, and I know, Tim, you'll speak to that. And I think that's great, right? We're getting more people normalizing the conversation. It's okay to not be okay and to talk about it. But the effectiveness of the telehealth for someone who really is at that bottom place as opposed to going to a 14 or 28-day inpatient, right, that's a good starting point. But, Craig, to your point, we need more places. To my knowledge, it's still not a big topic of conversation of having a lot of states open up inpatient facilities, or they're layering them within substance use facilities. And now you've got the other issue of a person with a process addiction sitting with someone with a substance addiction, and they're just not feeling that relatability. Tim, what else would you add on that?
Well, there's been a lot of changes the last 4 years. Number one, we now have, of course, a national helpline, 1-800-GAMBLER, that gets to a lot more states and gets people help for therapists and meetings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Here in California, we're very fortunate to have a residential program that is funded by the state of California. It's called BetShuva, the Right Action Program in West LA. They've been doing residential treatment with substance use disorder for the last 15 years. But they're unique, and, you know, they're state-funded, so folks with no money can get 2 months of treatment at no cost. But that's one of the rare ones. The bigger issue, we just don't have a workforce. So it's kind of like you're trying to field a team, but you barely have anyone who knows how to play the sport very well, or they think they know how to play because they watch a bunch of YouTube videos. The larger part that's interesting is there's the, we call it the GRIT Act, which is in Congress right now. And for the listeners out there, this is the first ever federal bill to actually put aside money for gambling recovery and infrastructure and treatment. So write to your congressman, say, hey, we need this thing funded, because right now there is no federal dollars that actually go to gambling treatment. I'll say 2 things about telehealth. You know, it's amazingly, in 4 years ago, I really wasn't doing that much. Now it's 90% of what we do at UCLA. We got parking, we got traffic, it's LA. It's a whole thing to come in, right? Our data is showing that telehealth is just as effective. But again, we're highly specialized, highly, you know, trained, you know, folks been doing this for a long, long time. One thing I want to tell you, Craig, and this is a perfect example, all that tax money, this is where the governments have to be much, much more transparent. You raise a bunch of tax money, okay, where does that go? Does that just mean you're cutting revenue from another pot? So all you're doing is raising A, category A, but then you're lowering category B, so it's a zero-sum game. And surprisingly, if I were to run a sports book, like a brick-and-mortar sports book, my net revenue is very, very small. People are shocked to hear that. I mean, what do you mean? You know, don't you make hand over fist? Traditional sports books have like a 2% margin. What's really different are these mobile sports betting books that have a much higher margin because the kind of bets that are being placed are not the traditional sports bets, right? 40% of the bets on mobile sports are same-game parlays, which are not at all like the old bets. These are essentially, in my mind, lottery cards. That's all they are. They're not traditional sports.
Well, look,
bets.
If you actually look at it, and I've looked up the studies, you know, more than half of all the revenue, all the net revenue to the online casinos and sportsbook operators are parlays, same-game parlays. And if you go back just a generation, you know, if I was going to gamble with the local bookie, guess what's not available to me? Same game parlays. And same game parlays, you might as well go into the casino and put $1 million on the table and try to win it like Pai Gow poker, you know, or these other games that, you know, mathematically you have no chance to win. But people get enamored with it, you know, the bonuses, the, you know, the extra money to wager with, all the freebie stuff. And the reality is that it's almost impossible to win a parlay. And then you'll read the one story about the guy who had a $40 parlay and won $3.2 million, and everybody thinks, I'm going to be the next guy to do it. But that's where they make the far majority of their money with those mobile apps. It's not even close.
Absolutely. And this is why sports betting and sports gambling are not the same. You know, sports betting, in my mind, is a term, an antiquated term, talking about me placing a wager against a person or based on my past knowledge of that event. It requires a little bit of skill. Sports gambling, it's just a game of chance, completely random.
Yep.
That's where many of these folks come in. They have no idea. They're like, oh, I'm a sports fan. I know football. I know baseball. I know trends. No, you don't. Not when it comes to the same game parlay. It literally is a shot in the dark. And no one understands that. They say, no, it's sports betting. Look at all the other people making money. So you're absolutely, what we're doing is we're uncovering the sausage here, how it's made, and recognizing that what we've created in 2024 in terms of sports betting, sports gambling, is very different than even in 2018. What it looks like 5 or 10 years from now, God only knows. That's the thing.
I'm fascinated that California's got a senator, considering every chance they've had to vote in favor of legalized gambling, they've said no to it, other than horse racing. You know, and California's the site of the biggest gambling scandal in sports, you know, since Pete Rose with the interpreter for Shohei Ohtani.
With the biggest sports, we have the biggest unregulated sports gambling market. In our state, gives out $4 million for gambling treatment, which is really impressive, but that's the same number as it was 2009. And we're really proud to announce we have a program called Westside Gambling Treatment that is a specific outpatient program just for sports gamblers and financial traders. So that's, you know, one of a kind. So that's available in California.
Well, look, I appreciate your time and the work you do. It's not lost on Dan and I how important, you know, people like you are in our world, because there are people like us who obviously need help. And it's nice to know that there's a caring, well-educated people out there that can provide that help. And I know we still haven't seen each other in person, but one day we will. I'll get out to California at some point. And I really appreciate your time today again, Doc, and all the work you do on behalf of gambling addicts out there. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Take care, you guys.
Be well. Thanks. Take care. Hi, Dan. Before we go, like, Dr. Fong's awesome and at the forefront of a lot of the research and, you know, the therapy sessions that help people like me and you. You're in an interesting spot getting ready for another college football season, of course. Give me an idea of where you guys are at with what you're doing and if there's been any major changes in the landscape of wagering that maybe I'm not aware of.
Yeah, a couple things. You know, whether, you know, previously with Epic and now with IC360, providing that education to college age individuals, athletes specifically, but also trainers, people who touch athletics, the coaches, the staff, the administrators. A couple of things that we've noticed just in the past year based on feedback and from what the research is starting to show, we're seeing an uptick in paid fantasy sports contests, and it's the daily fantasy, and that is a growing concern. So now we're talking about sports betting, sports gambling, as Dr. Fong just talked about the difference there, which was great, but also the paid daily fantasy sports is growing. We're starting to see more student-athletes also on the receiving end of threats. So whether bodily harm, threats against a person, a family member, from people who are placing bets or wagers, and this individual now has lost the game in their eyes, and now they're receiving death threats or some type of threatening message. So those are some of the things we're focusing on this year is integrity, monitoring, keeping an eye on the inside information. Don't do it. Don't get caught up in this world. It's just more information that we have to share with those individuals.
You keep doing God's work because that's what you're doing, pal. And I know you're celebrating, what, 13 years? We're up to 14. Where are we at with your recovery?
Man. This journey started in February 11th of 2010, so it's been over 14 years on this road.
You know, one of the great things about that is, so my day came and went. My anniversary of my last wager came and went about 3 weeks ago, right? And for the first time, so I'm now just over 6 years, you know, that wagering in any manner. And one of the, for me, I'm going to use the term beautiful, but one of the beautiful things for me in my life is that it's the first time that my date came and went and I forgot about it.
Wow.
Like it wasn't circled on my calendar. I didn't wake up and go, hey, today's my 6 year anniversary. I did that for five. I did that for four and three and two and one. But it's the first time where I was in a position, I think, in my life where life is just so good and I have so many positive things going on that I completely lost sight of the fact that my anniversary of my last wager came and went and I didn't acknowledge it. And I felt really good about that.
Well, congratulations. And you know what? Just like you tell other people, I'm proud of you. You know,
I appreciate
you.
It.
And I have been friends now for years, man. I'm proud of you, and I just love being on this journey with you.
All good. Be good. That's Dan Trelaw, of course, doing a great job. We will see you again next week on Hello, My Name is Craig. Joe Beningo's next. Have a great day, and thank you for listening on WFAN.